Dan Scanlon. It was the worst kept secret in town, as Lenny Curry made it official Tuesday and filed.
We were aware of it when he basically stepped down as chairman, and the hint was there then. Obviously, then Tuesday morning, he was there to sign up and sign in.
And so Fred Matthews, Peter Rummel, a local GOP heavyweight and fundraiser, has decided he's not going to back the horse he backed last time, Alvin Brown. He's decided he's backing Lenny Curry. Does Lenny Curry have a shot, though, against this well-financed and well-liked mayor with strong name recognition and good approval ratings?
Well, he obviously does have a shot. He's overshadowing the other, quote, local candidates that have been in the race, Councilman Bishop and Citizen, the other young lady that said that that's
Omega Allen,
yeah,
Omega Allen,
a classmate of mine, and I can't have
Omega Allen
Omega
has filed,
Allen
has filed
Tiffany
Wingo.
And Tiffany Wingo. But the two Republicans, obviously now three Republicans in the race, is what the voters are going to have a choice for. You know, it's almost as if Peter Rummel might have been better off running himself, because he probably at this point has more name recognition than Lenny Curry does among most of the citizenry. Now, I'm sure some polls are going to be out and they'll run the numbers, but if you run it, Peter Rummel versus Lenny Curry, most people will probably know Peter Rummel before they know Lenny Curry at this point. And the other thing is, now you're putting all the dice on the table. Jacksonville is going to be the focus of the state next April because of this race. A lot is going to be put behind the Democrat, our mayor. And, of course, now you've got the former state Republican chairman. All the dice are on the table, and it's going to be a focus of a lot. This could really tell where Florida goes in 2016.
Is it a bellwether? AG, both state parties badly want this seat.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be, you know, hotly contested seat. And, you know, you can expect the resources to come in on both sides. I would say this regarding Brown's approval ratings. They have gone down in the last year. And I think what Curry is sensing is that there's a softening support. There's room to move with the swing voters. And I think that's going to be where the action is.
And John Burr, the last go round, the business wing, the managerial wing of the local Republican Party decided they did not want Mike Hogan in office. They swung their support to Brown, and that was decisive. Now the managerial class of the local GOP has decided, nope, we're going with one of our own. They're going to go all in for Lenny Curry, probably. How are you seeing this play out in the local business community?
Well, you know, I got to say, the mayor has some pretty good support in the local business community, too.
As well.
Everbank and of course, the owner of the Jaguar, Shad Khan. So it's not he's got some friends there, I think it's going to be interesting. But I guess the advantage of the voters here is that we know who the two final candidates are going to be almost a year out, because, you know, the Republican, Lenny Curry kind of wiped the slate clean for the rest of the Republicans.
You think so?
Oh, sure.
Well, Dan Scanlon, what about that? Councilman Bill Bishop has also filed to run.
Well, Bill is a likable gentleman, and he's a knowledgeable gentleman. He's done a very good job as a city council member. But you've got the mayor's very popular no taxes stance. I mean, even though that may be hurting the city ultimately, that he doesn't want new taxes to be filed, a lot of the voters, if you ask them, they don't want taxes, and the mayor has that right now, slipping popularity ratings or not. But Lenny Curry is also a very likable gentleman. He has also been very well quoted in the media. Now, is it more that we know him versus the rest of the world? We know him as the Republican. We know him as the chairman. So it's going to be interesting. The mayor has to start taking a leadership role in a lot of issues right now that he is getting hammered on, so that his name recognition and the support, the real support, improves for him.
And we'll go to your calls. Let us know your thoughts on the local political scene and mayor's race. The number to join the show is 549-2937. We'll go to your calls in just a moment. Fred Matthews, what about that? Critics of the mayor have said he hasn't weighed in enough. He hasn't taken firm enough stands on contentious issues, whether it's the local human rights ordinance, getting into the weeds of the pension deal, which we'll talk about in a moment, or other matters. At the same time, this is a mayor who is very good at the retail politics. He's out and about. He's shaking hands, slapping backs. He's everywhere. He has high name recognition. And at the same time, the state Democratic Party is going to come through here again, especially on the last weekend, like a steamroller. And it was really quite an effort the last time around.
I mean, it is going to be quite an effort. This is a mayor who has nationwide connections, and that's one of the things that got him there. He was able to raise a substantial amount of money before Rummel's support of him in the first campaign. I mean, he was no slacker in raising money. And outside of what the contributions that he's gotten from Shad Khan, he still has raised quite a lot of money. And you're right. Come next spring, it's going to be everything thrown in. Now, you know, there will be this argument that he's failing to lead or failing to come forth. It's good campaign rhetoric. But the fact of the matter is that you have a front page photo of your mayor shaking hands with the head of the police and fire pension fund for the second time in a year, reaching an agreement on a fund that no other mayor since this thing was started has been able to do. The council has to either say yes or no this time. They can't just blow it off like they did last year. Then they have to decide how they're going to raise the money to fill the gap. The mayor has proposed. They have to dispose. And that's where it lies. By the time we get to January or February next year, this is not going to be on the table. It's not going to be on the table.
Those are good points. I think the mayor needs some wins. He needs that agreement with the unions. He needs some sort of way to fund the city's portion of the St. John's River dredging for the port. He needs some sort of win in downtown, whether it's a plan to fix up the landing or
a new corporate headquarters, something like that.
Or the Barnett building being reconstructed. So he needs some wins. And if he gets them, you know, he's going to be very tough to beat.
Well, you know, the mayor, every time we get a press release, majority of the time, it's the mayor announcing a new business. So he certainly has the business connections. He certainly is there at every press conference when new businesses come in. But let's go even higher up the ladder right now. We have a flip-flopping Democratic candidate for governor, and we have a Republican candidate for governor who's very pro-jobs, but even admits in his newest ads that the media doesn't like him. Will any of the Republican versus Democrat gubernatorial race filter down and people start voting party line? Do they want the Democrat or do they want the Republican? Will that hurt the current mayor if we don't want the flip-flopping Democrat and if we want the pro-jobs Republican governor?
And as you said, AG, or maybe it was Fred, the state parties are going all in. I'm sure we'll see some national figures swinging through town, too. Bill Clinton, almost certain to make a stop for Alvin Brown.
Absolutely.
We will probably see some major Republican names making a stop for the Republican nominee.
Right. And, you know, the way that shakes out is going to be an interesting thing. I could see a lot of cross-ticket voting, somebody voting Democrat for governor, somebody voting Republican for mayor, or vice versa. But I think in the end, as this coalesces, you're going to see coattails on both sides. It's going to look more like a traditional race.
And we are chewing through donuts and news headlines this morning on First Coast Connect. John Burr brings the donuts every Friday, but guess what? It's National Donut Day today. So as we eat breakfast, we want your calls right now, 549-2937. Let's go to Rick in Avondale. Hey, Rick, good morning. You're on the air.
Hey, Melissa. How are you today?
Great, thanks.
As a Republican, I think a lot of Republicans in the 11th hour were very frustrated in the previous election with the candidate that, I hate to use this word, but it was the old guard. It was no fresh face, someone that had just moved up for the ranks. I was one of them in the 11th hour. I switched and I voted for that new candidate in our current mayor that had great hopes that he would bring a lot of new thought, new ideas, which he hasn't. So I think with Mr. Curry coming into the race, you're going to see a lot of those 11th hour Republicans going back to a new fresh face who maybe can revitalize downtown.
And who will you cast your vote for, Rick?
Well, I'm not totally sure, but at this point I would lean towards Mr. Curry, only because I think that I've lived here for 33 years, and we need to do something different downtown. We need a new fresh face, and I think he brings that to it. So I'm not sure exactly who I'll vote for, but I know who I'm leaning towards.
That's Rick in Avondale. Thanks for the call. So the incumbent, Mayor Brown, he will have to convince those who are on the fence, like Rick, give me another 4 years. Give me time to see this through.
Yeah, and that's the caller makes a great point, really, because Mayor Brown only won by, I don't know, what was it, 1,800 votes. It was not a landslide by any means. And he's right. There was a real feeling of, hey, you know, Mike Hogan represents the past, the same old, same old. We need a fresh face with new ideas. And whether voters feel that Brown brought those new ideas and implemented those new ideas will go a long way toward whether a lot of people vote for him.
Well, Curry is certainly a young and vital-looking gentleman, too, which will bring some youth to the mayor's race. And so he's going to be out there.
They're both about the same age, aren't
they? But I think you'll see a lot of activity on both of them as they campaign. They will be out there doing things. It won't just be a paper campaign.
And, you know, Fred, you can't discount the power of incumbency in any race.
Well, I mean, that's what he has. Mayor Brown has this time around. He has an incumbency, and he's using it, as we've already discussed. I mean, every opportunity, whether it's a small or a large event, you can have a great chance of seeing the mayor at any time just walking around in shirt sleeves or short sleeves. Or, you know, he's just there all the time, all over the city. And that makes a big difference. And of course, with any, as we found out with former Mayor Payton in his first term, there were missteps because he was not familiar. Neither really was his staff, except for Susie Wiles, who was there with him to guide him through the political trolls. But Mayor Payton had some issues the first few years that he was in office because he was totally unfamiliar with the Wiles of government, had never served in it before, and it took him that term to get his footing. And that's where we are here. The primary difference is that in Brown's case, he's, at least for me, he was familiar with how government works. He just had to get himself familiar with how Jacksonville works specifically. But he already had a lot of friends here. And the other part is that each side here will have their voters who are going to vote for them. Republicans, the hardcore, are going to vote Republicans no matter what. Democrats are going to, for the most part, do the same thing here. And remember, Democratic voters still outnumber Republican voters in the city and in the state. And there, and there, unless there's some gigantic reason for them to change, mm-hmm. It's not going to change.
And I would not discount either. AG, turnout the last time in the urban core and on the north and northwest sides for Alvin Brown was heavy. You can expect that again.
Yeah, you can expect that to a point. I don't know if the Riverside, Avondale contingent is going to turn out for him the way they did, and I think that made a difference last time. There was a lot of enthusiasm among the 18 to 35s for Brown. I don't know if that's going to be replicated. I think the way Curry is going to play it, he's just going to, you know, play the Audrey Moran, John Delaney playbook, sort of fiscally conservative, socially moderate. And I think that's kind of the golden mean for Jacksonville voters. So I think Brown's going to have different challenges this time for sure.
Well, if I might just chime in, that's a key point that AJ makes. The human rights ordinance will be one that can be played up by the opposition to Brown in this case. The problem with playing it up is that you've got to take a position.
And now, will Lenny Curry take it? So far, he has not taken a position.
He's danced around it, and it is not the favorite position of the Republican Party.
That's right.
But that's a group of voters that, you're right, is going to be key in this race.
Jonathan in Arlington, thanks for holding. Jonathan, go ahead. You're on the air.
Good morning. I just wanted to point out something I heard one of your guests say. He said in one sentence that the Mayor Brown has a pretty strict no new cash policy. But then in a different sentence, he said that the mayor had reached an agreement with police unions and he's going to send it to the city council and have them try to figure a way to pay for it. It seems to me like the mayor's kind of passing the buck on this. And he's saying, I'm not going to raise taxes. I'm not going to do anything about that. But I'm going to send a deal to the city council and they're going to have to raise taxes to do something to figure out how to pay for it. And to me, it seems like the mayor is trying to reach out to the Republicans with this whole, you know, smokescreen of no new taxes. But yeah, he's putting the city council in a position where they're going to have to pay the bills and they're going to have to take the blame. And that's just kind of what I got from what he said earlier. I just wanted to hear his comments on that.
Thanks, Jonathan. Thanks for the call. Let's talk about that for a minute, because the other big story this week, will this one stick? On Wednesday, the mayor filed legislation asking city council to sign off on a pension reform deal for the city, estimated to save all of us taxpayers nearly $2 billion over 30-some years. Council members still have questions and concerns, in particular, as the caller just said, Dan, How is the city going to assume this $40 million nut and pay down that aspect of it? Will JEA pick that up? Will it come from somewhere else? We don't know.
The JEA has obviously been fingered more than once verbally by the mayor as a possible source. They certainly don't like the idea. And my other question is, has the mayor even signed off on the extension of the gas tax, which
he could still veto
may
that.
Not be a new tax, but would go against his grain. Yet it's just a continuation, more or less. So there's a lot of questions about funding sources right now that no one knows.
The JEA is not in a great position to put in $40 million a year. The big thing in the news this week nationally earlier in the week was this new carbon emissions regulations that the Obama administration's putting in. That's going to hit power plants. It's going to make it more expensive. They've got a retrofit to come up to speed with those regulations. That's going to take many millions of dollars out of JEA's
and
pocket.
And we're coal-fired, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, now the problem I have with that whole argument is, you know, it's always, you know, I think JEA was first asked for $80 million. Now people are talking about $40 million. You know, why can't, it's always these big numbers. Why can't JEA pay $10 million and then we find, you know, the other $30 million somewhere else? It's always an all or nothing argument. And I think there needs to be a little bit more creativity here on where we find the money.
Well, but anyway, you slice it, AG, whether JEA does something or the money comes from somewhere else, it seems inevitable that the taxpayers will have to assume some of this somewhere, somehow.
Yeah, and there really needs to be more of a nuanced discussion from the mayor's office about this. I mean, it kind of reminds me of the Bush administration, the first Bush administration with the No New Taxes pledge. I mean, sooner or later, you have to find the funding for initiatives that happen. And, you know, no new taxes could be the thing that this mayoral race predicated on, definitely with this pension deal and all these other things. So, yeah, you can definitely see that in play.
549-2937 to join the discussion this Friday on First Coast Connect with our media roundtable. Keith in Mandarin, thanks for holding, Keith. You're on the air. Good morning.
Hi. Boy, you've got all kinds of issues this morning. I was going back to the question about Mayor Brown. I'm a registered Republican, but I always try to vote for the best candidate or against the worst one.
Okay.
And I voted for Governor Brown, Mayor Brown, but I was extremely disappointed when the first thing he did is change the website of the city to his personal public relations campaign. And then you call the city and you get the mayor. I don't want the mayor. I want to talk to some government official. And now going on to that pension business.
But what, hey, Keith, what do you mean you call the city and you get the mayor? What do you mean by that?
Well, I think doesn't the mayor answer the telephone when you call him? I
mean, the mayor is the voice over.
Oh,
on
you
the
mean the
voice?
You mean the recorded message? Okay.
I wish he answered the phone when we call.
But go ahead, Keith. Go ahead, Keith.
Anyway, going on to the pension issue, it does seem to me as though the mayor should have come up with a funding proposal for the $40 million. Now, maybe it may be the council's responsibility. I don't know. Maybe the members of the panel have some opinion on that. But I just think that going back to Lenny, I think he may have done a fairly good job as chairman of the county Republican Party and then the state. But still, I would much rather have somebody who had some experience with the city government.
So you're as yet undecided, Keith? Are you as yet undecided?
Am I what?
Are you undecided?
Well, for the mayor, yes. I was hoping, like maybe the first caller said, Peter Rummel. I mean, there's a man with a business experience, which is what we definitely need in this city.
But business isn't government. And John Payton learned that too, Keith. Running government is not like running a business.
Peter Rummel is much more comfortable playing the puppet master
behind the scenes.
Yeah.
So, but Keith, just
you'll
to
never
close,
see him running. For
Keith, just to close it out with you, you still haven't decided who you'll vote for?
I'm sorry, what is this?
You still haven't decided who will get your vote?
Oh, no. First of all, it's way down the line. I think people should be given more of an opportunity to prove what they can do. And the same thing on the governor, although I certainly am not going to vote for it. I'm probably voting for Scott.
Okay. Thanks, Keith.
Well, you know, as the mayor himself said this week, he says he's providing leadership and he's got a while to go before he has to start campaigning. And it's not the first time he said that.
But look, this is a guy.
He's in office, so he's campaigning.
This is a guy who made his bones in the Clinton years in Washington. Who is the mastermind of the permanent campaign?
Exactly. Yeah.
Bill Clinton.
Yeah. Yeah.
Helen in Jacksonville. Hi, Helen. You're on the air.
Hi there. I have two quick points. I voted for Mayor Brown, but when he appointed Ronnie Belton, he lost me. He should not have anything to do with finances, but that's just the only point there. The second is with the pension, the police pension. That unfunded liability came about. Nobody ever talks about why there's an unfunded liability. And it came about when the city borrowed from the pension fund back when the Super Bowl was coming to town. And the media paints it as the police being uncooperative when the city just doesn't want to pay back what they borrowed and wants new employees to take up that cost rather than pay back what they borrowed. And nobody ever asks how the unfunded liability came to be. And I would like the media to start addressing that so it paints a better picture than looking like officers don't want to cooperate. And that's all I have to say. And
all right. Dan. Thank you, Helen. Thanks for the call.
Well, you know, the question can be asked of any administration, and if they don't wish to answer, and it's not just the Brown administration, then we don't get the answer.
Yeah, but she's right about the fact that the unfunded liability had a few factors that have allowed it to fester and become a big issue.
Yeah, but okay, I think people are focused on solving the problem.
And how
at
do
this
we
point.
Solve it now?
You know,
right?
Not going dredging up the old history of how we got into it. And you know, Jacksonville is certainly not unique in having done that. And there's a lot of cities around the country
and
problems.
Ben tweets the show. There was a lot of unfinished work on the table when Alvin took over. His term has been about cleaning up messes.
Well, I mean, look, the city council can either turn down this agreement again and have us to renegotiate another deal. All 19 of them can do it themselves with the pension fund. Or they can accept the basic package that's been handed to them, mediated by a respected mediator statewide who came here and basically got the deal done. The only thing that is left is how we're going to fund the $40 million gap. When you look at the basic parts of it, the pension fund has agreed to turn over to the city $63 million out of their fund. $40 million of that would be used by the city to begin to pay down that liability, help them get the first year's $40 million payment done. So what we're talking about here is what we're going to do in the out years leading up to 2024, I believe it is, so that we can close the gap on the liability. And the pot that the mayor has proposed is the JEA pot to do it. And that doesn't cost taxes. It doesn't cost us any more heartburn than the high light bills we're paying right now. I'm still looking for that $32 they promised me from last month in my bill. I didn't see it yet.
Willie on the south side. Willie on the south side. Go ahead, Willie.
Yeah, I just want to make one comment concerning why the mayor would even consider passing the burden of finding the finance to the city council. It appears to me, and I've seen several issues where the city council has opposed the mayor on tax issues, on funding, and I think that he did right, because instead of creating another storm where they're going to be demanding this and wanting that and cutting out what he's doing, let them decide. They have the power to do that. As a matter of fact, I think that that's their job.
Thank you so much for the call, Willie. And thanks for everyone who's calling in. Keep calling, but we're going to discuss a few other news and notes from the week here on our Friday Media Roundtable. From this week's JBJ, Visit Jacksonville is working on a promotional campaign to leverage the city's growing craft beer scene into a tourism draw. John, maybe beer can pay down our pension liability.
Or make us forget it.
Or at least we can drink away right. Our sorrows. The logistics of the Jack's Ale Trail, as they're calling it, are still in the works. But Visit Jack's will launch a statewide campaign after the 4th of July holiday. Mm-hmm. Go into a Chenal Works, go craft beer in Jacksonville. How about that?
Well, we may have found our tourism niche, you know, and I can't say it's a bad one. You know, we've been talking about ecotourism for a decade now. You know, with apologies to the kayaking folks around town, that really hasn't gone very far. You know, people seem to be latching on to the craft beer pretty well.
People love their craft beers. AG, there was a food fight during the legislative session over efforts to put more of a burden on small craft breweries like Intuition Ale Works. It failed. These local brewers are saying, hey, we're part of this small business economy. Leave us alone.
Right. And you had some people from the craft brew community talking about the cartel of major beer and all of that and distribution and all of those things go along. I wonder about the viability of craft beer tourism, honestly, because every city has, you know, craft beer, two or three local brands. So I don't know if this dog's really going to hunt.
Huh.
I've got an idea. Why don't we do the craft beer with the kayaks?
So yeah,
we'll fill up your mugs if you kayak up to the
Manatee. That could be dangerous. That could be a little dangerous.
Well, can anybody explain to me the difference between ale and beer and grog?
It all gets you to the same place, Fred. That's
don't
all
drive.
I'm a PBR man. That's all I know.
Meanwhile, our Jacksonville business editor, John Burr, says we've all been taken for a ride on the Skyway as the much maligned service. I'm going to get in trouble for saying that. It is now up to 1 million riders. Let's point that out. 1 million riders. That's good. That's a big number, John. But you have a column saying, giving your thoughts on this anniversary, John Burr.
Well, the Skyway is it's not even fair. I mean, it's like shooting fish in the barrel. It's been a punching bag for people like me for 25 years and or longer. No, my point is that we're kind of in this really bad place. It's a twisted logic of you either extend the Skyway and spend another 10, 15, 20 million on it, or you kind of just have this toy train system that doesn't do a whole lot and everybody's dissatisfied with. So, you know, and how we got there and what we do about it is going to be interesting to see.
Well, what do you think about JTA's efforts to extend it to the new 220 Riverside project? To actually make an effort to put it in places where there are hubs of people, get it where people are going, get it into those traffic corridors.
Well, I will tell you, having been around here a long time, like some of us at this table, I can remember when there was an attempt to take it down to the football stadium, mm-hmm. and that was kiboshed because of some business dealings and other issues, and maybe that was a good idea at the time, but that would have been a logical thing. Coming here today and seeing that because of the soccer game, they've bagged all of the parking meters on Bay Street because that's the way the traffic's going to go. Wouldn't it have been nice to have had a few Skyway Express trains to take you to and from a satellite parking lot and just help? And that was 25 years ago that idea came out.
Right. And I can't believe I'm saying this, but really extending it is the only thing that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Down into the Five Points area, to the stadium, down into the heart of San Marco. Then you got something that, you know, people can zip around on and get to different parts of the city, desirable parts of the city very quickly. And, you know, but, oh my goodness, it's got the project has such a horrible history that getting people to sign on to pay for that is going to...
It's an uphill climb, yeah.
If it wasn't for One Spark, I don't think anybody would ride it. I still see no one on it. But the only time I've been on it is One Spark.
One Spark proved that if you give people a reason, they will ride it.
People are dying for public transportation to actually work in the city. And, you know, you hear about things like the Riverside Shuttle and stuff like that. People use them, you know, not just, you know, for utilitarian purposes, but mm-hmm. also to make a point that they want mass transit that isn't there. And, you know, I'm on board with extending the Skyway because, you know, to make it actually viable, you've got to have it to where people can get to it without making like,
how is our in-house libertarian going to pay for it, A.G. Gankarski?
I think we need to raise taxes to pay for the things that we actually need as a city.
I've
been consistent with this.
Well, and keep in mind, it's free now, folks. It wasn't free before.
That's right.
It's free. When you put the fare back in, which you ultimately will have to do if you extend this to help pay for it, that will tell another tale. And keep in mind, we got this on a federal government grant, and the grant is not there, although we'll probably get another grant to extend it. And, of course, the 6% extension will help to pay for this that the city council has done. All JETA is benefiting greatly from our largesse on this deal, so they're okay. It's just their partner across the way that's not so okay. And that's how we're going to pay for it. But the fare is going to have to come back.
Right.
That will tell the true tale of how this is going to work. Right. I mean, I enjoy the Express. I pay for it. I'm a senior now, so I get to ride for free anyway. But, you know, the key is that we have to have the extension. It is a great way to move around downtown. You can park outside of downtown and get wherever you want to go to within minutes.
You know, I would think people in Springfield would be dying for this because you know, if you extended it up Main Street, you know, you could make the argument that that would really tip the scales for Springfield and start some.
And it might cost less than the gas you're putting in your car.
Peggy right. in Mandarin's on the phone about this. Hey, Peggy, good morning. Go ahead.
Hey, Melissa. I just want to put in my opinion that I think it's valuable even now, but I think it will be great when it's extended. If you go to any big city and take their public transportation around, it will grow itself if we extend it. And I particularly thought it was a great idea to take it out to the stadium. But I also just wanted to say that I am for any mayoral candidate who is willing to raise taxes or do whatever is necessary to improve the quality of life in Jacksonville, to improve the downtown area, to improve access to the symphony, to do lots of other things that will draw people. And I think we need a big central downtown attraction like an aquarium. And I know it's all money. So
yeah,
anyway,
sure.
That's my opinion.